Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The scale and the complexity of Saturday's attacks by Hamas have shocked the world and perhaps shocked many nations into confronting the relentless and deadly conflict that appears to be getting more and more intractable. Because the fighting between Israel and Palestine has killed thousands of people, it's forced entire generations to grow up under occupation, it's created constant anxiety of impending rocket fire or bombings. Well, Francesco Cavatorta is Professor of Political Science at Laval University in Quebec and also co-author of the textbook Politics and Governance in the Middle East, and he joins me on the line now to delve into the context of this deeply polarising situation. You're very welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us this morning. I want to begin by asking you about this question, which was posed by Peter Murta, who's the former Irish Times correspondent. And he suggests that it's possible to sympathise with the Palestinian cause while absolutely abhorring the medieval butchery of Hamas, and then at the same time to criticise Israeli politics without being anti-Semitic. Do you agree, Francesco?
It is certainly possible. It is going to be a lot more difficult from today onwards, I suspect. The scale of the attack, the butchery, as you called it, I think are going to be extremely difficult for those who defend Palestine to justify, to even explain to a certain extent. Broadly speaking, I think it is definitely feasible. I'm not sure that though. I suppose elected governments, particularly in the West, are very keen to listen to this particular message.
Mm-hmm. But when the rest of us are looking on at what's happening now in the Middle East, and someone used the word absolute despair this morning, Dr. Hamad, it was, who flew to Gaza to carry out liver transplants and is now in a UN bunker. And he was very careful with his language, but he did use that word, absolute despair, seeing what's happening on both sides of this.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree. The problem is that this was always going to happen, or something like this was always going to happen. There's always an air of inevitability to these kind of actions. The peace process had been stuck or non-existent, really, for decades now. The Palestinians have tried different things to kind of break the logjam. It didn't really work. They had their, march for peace to the border a couple of years ago, and about 80 of them got shot by the Israeli army, while several Israeli citizens were sitting on a hill looking at that a few years ago. Hamas also made an offer of a long truce that Netanyahu rejected. I think the Palestinians, now the other Arab states are kind of, entertaining diplomatic relations with Israel, normalizing the situation. I'm not saying that this is necessarily a bad thing, but I think the Palestinians felt that this was done over their heads. And maybe the Hamas thinking is that, well, we need to do something, to just keep reminding everyone that we exist, we are still here. The problem has not gone away, and unless there is a political solution, this is bound to happen, and we are going to be able to take the punishment that Israel will dish out, and then see what happens once the shooting. Once the shooting stops.
My God, though, I mean, it is so hard to understand the logic around knowing and anticipating what the response would be to what happened over the weekend and going ahead and doing it.
I think that, this, as you mentioned and you said, did not start yesterday, did not start on Saturday. Maybe some of your, I suppose, older listeners will remember this kind of started in December 1987, when the Palestinians first rose up in the occupied territories. And periodically we have been through this in a kind of, tit for tat that seemed to finally come to an end with the peace process, but the peace process failed. And ever since we've gone back to this kind of tit for tat. And every time each side says, well, but this is in response to what you did. And it seems to never end. Mm-hmm. And maybe the false sense of security that Israel had for a while now has been shattered. And this was probably the objective that Hamas that Hamas had in mind with this operation.
There's a piece of analysis in the New York Times today which suggests Israel was cutting quiet deals with Hamas, you know, trying to keep some sort of stability in the Gaza Strip, especially since the withdrawal from the territory back in 2005. But that New York Times piece says that while Israel had considered Hamas a terrorist organisation, it played a useful role for Israel in the Gaza Strip because it kept a lid on some of the other more militant groups who might have become prominent in that time. But the attack now has stripped away any illusions about Hamas and its intentions.
Oh, yeah, no, I think that this is correct in a way because low-level contacts have always been going on between the two to ensure that Gaza remains somewhat stable. But also we have to consider that there's probably been pretty large change within the Hamas, the organization. New generations come to power. Older heads are either killed, as happened in the mid-2000s by Israel. Some others, you know, maybe kind of give up. New generation comes to power. They can harness, you know, the despair of Gazans. There's 2.3 million people in the Gaza Strip. And so maybe a new generation comes in, new military commanders. They have other ideas about how to go about this. Maybe they also need to kind of burnish their credentials through some sort of conflict. There's also the suspicion that I kind of read in one local analysis that said that in fact some of the members of the political wing of the group didn't even know about the attack, that it came kind of as a surprise that this was an operation by the military wing. I suspect it's not necessarily true. But you know, we also have to consider the changes over time that take place within an organization.
Although that might explain why the Israelis didn't know about it. You know, if there was only a select group in Hamas who knew about it.
Well, I think maybe there has been in Israel the tendency to think that the problem had been, in a way, not solved, of course, but at least contained. You know, there's a wall, there's barriers, there's technological surveillance, there's drone surveillance, surveillance of communication. But again, I think once all this kind of security apparatus is put in place, give it some time, the ones who are subjected to this are going to find ways to get around it. And I think suspect that this is exactly what happened. And so maybe instead of communicating by phone as they used to do or using the internet, maybe they started using pen and paper. And how do you then intercept that if you have no physical presence? I mean, I don't know if that is the case, but the idea is, again, organizations do adapt, do change, and if they have some sort of popular support, they're able to make their demands known, although in this case they've done so through a terrible, terrible massacre and act of violence.
And what you say, that a lot of what we are witnessing, it chimes with the conflict in Northern Ireland, and that the way forward in that situation was always clear. But then taking that step is just abhorrent to so many people.
It is. I think at the moment, the problem that we've always seen as analysts is that it's not that there is no solution. In fact, I think the solution is quite clear. And, you know, it's again this kind of broad concept of land for peace. And everyone knows that a solution has to kind of evolve around this particular concept. But there has never been a moment really when this was politically acceptable by one side or the other or by both sides at the same time. And so we've kept going on in kind of this spiral of violence. And now we see, you know, this violence getting to heights that are unprecedented, really. Mm-hmm.
Because Bill Clinton, who, you know, some would say brokered the deal in Ireland with the Good Friday Agreement, or at least had a very big role in that, he made two attempts at this, didn't he? Two very serious attempts.
He did, yeah.
And failed. Others have done the same. Why is it so intractable? We can compare it to Northern Ireland on one hand until we get to the point where we can reach some sort of a solution.
Well, there are different explanations for the failure. One, you know, some would contend that, you know, power is so disproportionately distributed that, in fact, one of the two sides, namely Israel, has no real interest in a political solution because they would end up simply making concession, losing and not gaining much because they have such, you know, military preponderance and diplomatic support. Others would say that the Palestinians are unrealistic about the demands they make and therefore they're unable to negotiate a proper deal. Arafat, for instance, did not seem to be able to do that. Others still say, you know, well, this is a kind of civilizational conflict and therefore, you know, it's intractable because it mixes ownership of the land with religion and so on and so forth. I don't think any of them is necessarily true. There's also, you know, the idea that maybe, unfortunately, the political leadership on both sides was quite weak for different reasons, and therefore politicians are unable to make the sacrifice that is necessary to get to a solution, and they are comforted by voters. Because obviously, you know, kind of right-wing extremists in Israel get elected, and on the other side, Palestinians elect Hamas. But that is also understandable because, mm-hmm. you know, when you're in a conflict, you want to make sure that your kind of strongest, or what you perceive to be the strongest person, is in charge.
Yeah, just, you know, we're talking about these macro questions and the people who are there, you know, it almost doesn't bear thinking about, you know, what they're going through or what they're anticipating. And I saw the World Health Organization this morning pleading with a humanitarian corridor to be opened up via Egypt. Like, is anyone in any mood to show any mercy to the civilians who are going to be caught up in this, who are caught up in this?
I you know, obviously, from a personal perspective, that is what should be done. But I think if we have to look at it from kind of, as again, an analyst point of view, I think this is highly unlikely that it will happen. I think that Gazans are in for a very, very, very rough ride for a while. I think Mr. Netanyahu has been quite clear, and his ministers as well. This is about vengeance, really. It's about showing strength, and it's absolutely understandable because I think what has happened between Saturday and Sunday was absolutely horrific, and they think that they're within their right to then seek revenge, punish Hamas, and degrade their operational capabilities. And I have no doubt that this is exactly what will happen. But then the question is going to be further down the line. Well, then what? And I think no one, unfortunately, has an answer to that. You know, what Hamas does next? Well, we don't know. And what does Israel do once they have degraded Hamas to such a large extent? Well, we also do not know.
It is a desperate situation. Francesco, thank you for taking us through all of that today. That's Francesco Cavatorta, who's Professor of Political Science. We'll take a break, back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.